From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows.
Hey there, children of the night, and welcome to Bob After Dark, the show that takes you into the shadows and goes and says hello to everything that goes bump in the night. I'm your host with the most that enjoys toast, Bob, and alongside of me, as always, is my ever-wonderful, ever-vampiric, ever-cape-wearing, and forever the snazziest dresser in the room.
Well, hey.
My friend, my producer, my brother, Count Panic himself. Oh, hey there, Count Panic.
Oh, hey there, Bob. Excited to be back. Another edition of Bob After Dark, of course.
Yes. Question on everybody's mind, Count Panic.
Yeah.
Do vampires like pierogies?
Oh, man. We can't get enough of it. A blood-filled pierogi is what we like.
What is your favorite flavor?
Blood.
Blood pierogies.
Yeah, yours?
I'm a potato cheddar guy myself.
You don't like a little blood in your pierogi?
No, thank you.
Oh, okay. Just me.
I'm vegetarian, don't forget.
Wow. So vegetarian blood.
Something like that. If this is your first time ever watching or listening to an episode of Bob After Dark, we are your weekly-ish show where we talk about legends, lore, supernatural things that go bump in the night, lights in the sky, weird cryptid stories, and of course... Is that Tony Panic guy that's on during the afternoons? Is he excited to be Mr. Pierogi next week at Pierogi Fest?
Oh, man, Bob. Man, I'm sure there's something we're going to touch a little bit about it next week's episode as well. But yes, very excited.
Yes.
I've been talking to this guy, and Mr. Pierogi seems like he's very hyped up for this.
Mr. Pierogi, is he a cryptid?
That's a good point, Bob.
Is he's half man, half pierogi?
He's definitely a mythical.
Is it a were-pierogi?
He's a mythical creature for sure.
Is it a were-pierogi?
It's a were-pierogi, yeah.
Were-pierogi.
Yeah. I say there's a good chance he's a cryptid, Bob.
Good to know.
Yeah.
All right. So we divide the show up into two parts. First part is where we talk about the weird spooky news of the week. That's where you, the fans, and me, the Bob, go diving into the internet for any kind of weird, paranormal, spooky science, the advances in science that borderline on science fiction, any kind of news story like that, and read the articles. We get the hashtag Panic's Take. This week, Panic's got two videos that he had to watch and give reactions to, so we're looking forward to that. And then we talk about the lore of the week. So without further ado, Count Panic.
Yeah.
Are you ready?
Bob, I'm ready as I've ever going
to
be.
Okay, so let's dive into the first news story. This comes to us from our old pal Tim Banal at Coast to Coast AM. This video is the Anomaly Hunter spots a door on Mars. Did you watch the video?
I did see this, Bob.
Okay, well, let me read the article
sure.
to you. While searching NASA images for oddities on Mars, an anomaly hunter spotted an unusual feature that he believes to be a doorway carved into the face of a rock. The peculiar find was made by an U.S. UFO researcher Scott Waring as he examined a photo that was taken by the Perseverance rover earlier this month. When looking at the photo, his eyes were quickly drawn to a distinct shape on a rock sitting on the horizon. According to his estimate, the possible doorway measures approximately 6.5 feet on each side, with perfect 90-degree angles on each corner. Marveling over the fantastic find, Waring mused, "What's the chance that a perfect square entrance would be found on Mars?" And that theorized that the suspected doorway could lead to a huge, huge complex beneath the surface of the planet. The anomaly hunter also expressed dismay that NASA captured the curious shape in the image, but apparently did not find it intriguing enough to further investigate. The reasoning behind that it may be, as many skeptics will suggest, the quote-unquote door is merely a trick of the light and shadow of natural weathering. So hashtag Panic's Take, you watched the video.
Yeah,
doorway or no doorway?
You know, I'm still reviewing it again as well. I watched it once already. I'm watching it back. It's kind of hard to say, Bob. It looks like it could be, but with the illusion of the sand and whatnot, I could see maybe it's just something we think that it's there and it's not really there, but it sure looks like a doorway. It could be a doorway.
Do you want my opinion?
You think it's a bunch of smoke and mirrors?
I think it's a trick of the eyes.
Trick of the eyes.
I don't think it's a doorway. Don't get me wrong. I'm not usually the type to go popping, bursting hopes and dreams here.
Yeah.
But I spend a lot of time looking at evidence and photos and videos, guys. It's like what I do.
Yeah.
And I'm staring at this, and I am not. I don't get it. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and doubt what, you know, the Scott's saying about what he sees, because, you know, it's, you know, what he believes, but I just, I don't catch it.
No, nothing.
You're with me on it?
Yeah, you know what, maybe it's a little too one-dimensional, so to speak, but I mean, I get what people are seeing. I could see that, but yeah, I don't know. Maybe just
can you send this to our friends at the Challenger Center, and we can get an update on that for next episode?
I can do that, yeah.
Yep, because I'm curious what they think. Yeah. They're a bit more experts than you and I combined.
Yeah,
but I'm sticking with I'm sticking with just an anomaly.
Yeah.
Yep. And keep in mind, guys, I'm the first person to be like, yeah, I'm all for it. I think there's something there. This one just a little too far-fetched, in my opinion.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on. This one comes to us from The Mirror, which is a UK-based magazine tabloid deal. It's about a TikTok video. Now, Comp Panic, do you tick and talk?
I do not do neither. I neither tick nor I talk.
I enjoy the TikTok. There's some clever things on there. But this article is about a particular video about what people believe are simulations, that we're existing in a simulation, and that people catch the glitch in the matrix things. We've done an episode about it before. I think it's time to revisit, because things are getting a little more weirder now. But this is written by somebody. They don't quote their writer on here. So my sincerest. Oh, nope. Here we go. Hannah Kane, this one's for you. A viral video left thousands of people mind blown and thinking the Matrix is real, as a woman appears to be frozen in the middle of the street. An anonymous TikTok account posted the video, which appears to show a woman completely freeze mid-step while cars pass around her. After a few seconds of her standing utterly motionless, she continues her walk. The clip was first posted on this past Wednesday and has gained tens of thousands of views. However, many are left doubting its authenticity. The man filming the video can be heard, "Why is she frozen? Bruh, I'm tripping. What the blank?" A caption over the viral video also reads, "She was like that for a minute before." Many commenters were left completely baffled by the bizarre video. One viewer, Carrie Bailey, said, "The way the wind isn't moving her clothes on or her hair, but it's all just stuck completely frozen." Another added, "She disconnected for a second," and a third also joked, "Her Wi-Fi was bad." Another person said, "Sometimes I think we've slipped into another dimension." But there was a healthy dose of skepticism in the comments as well. Another TikTok user said, "I find it very interesting that there's hundreds of glitch videos online, but nobody has ever seen one in real life." Another commenter chimed in, "Crazy how we have everything we have tech-wise, and everyone knows, but they still fail for the edits." It was a paused video of a video. So somebody recorded a paused video of a video.
Interesting.
Although the video has been met with skepticism, it still racked up a whopping 468,000 likes on the social platform. The clip has been shared 8,000 times and bookmarked for a further 34,000 times. Hashtag panic stake.
Yeah, so I saw the video you sent me there, and it's kind of weird. It seems like she is frozen in time, but you're saying that people are saying now it was the recording of a recording, essentially?
Or? Yes.
Okay.
They're saying it's somebody just did a quick overlap edit. Somebody paused the video.
I mean, that's easy to manage. I mean, it doesn't have to be something that spooky. It seems like it could be a camera trick.
Sure.
Yeah.
I'm going with... This is two for two for me tonight, guys. I'm going with hoax. I'm going with a legitimate hoax.
Two hoaxes
back to back. I'm not the type, man. I don't know what's wrong with me. What's gotten into my head, Colin? I'm not the same Bob. Maybe I'm a glitch. But I'm looking. I saw the video and I've rewatched it several times, and it. I want to believe it.
Yeah.
I wish I could believe it, but this is definitely one of those where I'm like, I think it was staged. Do you know how easy it is for me to stage things?
Yeah.
Yeah, I could do that. So I'm going with staged. You?
I'm going to say staged too here, because it's easy to manipulate, I think, that footage there.
Okay. Last news article comes to us from the Daily Star. Once again, a tabloid from the UK here. Written by Michael Moran. Former USMC rifleman Michael Hara says his house is regularly being buzzed by unmarked helicopters, which he thinks are connected to black-clad soldiers that threatened his life in Indonesia. A former U.S. Marine who sensationally claimed that his unit stumbled across a secret military rendezvous with an alien spacecraft says that he has been threatened. He even fears that one day he could be killed by sinister forces that are trying to cover up the Pentagon's UFO secrets. Michael Herrera was a part of a U.S. Navy humanitarian mission during the 2009 Sumatra earthquake. After he was ambushed by a paramilitary unit, he was searched and had his camera confiscated by a mysterious soldiers in black. He was warned several times not to tell anyone about the strange flying saucer-type craft he had seen in the Sumatran jungle. After remaining silent about his strange encounter for many years, he has told his story last month at a briefing given by Dr. Stephen Greer's Disclosure Project. He has now told podcaster Sean Ryan that the intimidation from shadowy forces within the U.S. military has increased. I've had numerous encounters with red-acted helicopters hovering above my house. They were hovering above my dad's house too, Michael said. They get so low where they rattle the walls and scare the red-acted out of the animals and that we've got. My dad's dogs were red-acted going crazy at the point that he was concerned because he was home and he was like, I've never seen or heard anything like that before. Michael said that he shot the video footage of unmarked black helicopters, and he knows that the UFO, that he knows other UFO whistleblowers, even people within the U.S. government, have been subjected to the same intimidation tactics. He continued, there's just a kind of hysterical factor to how much they're reacting, spending on this to happen to try either to intimidate me or anybody else for that matter. Mm. There's some elected officials and even government officials I know that have been having the same thing happen to them because of what they've told me personally. Michael lives close to the Denver airport, so he's optimistic the government contacts can help him trace the source of the mystery flights because they would be traveling through the airport's restricted airspace. Michael is concerned that, as he continues to talk about his UFO experience, the intimidation will escalate. He added, I don't feel like harming myself. Everybody makes the joke that a certain somebody didn't die in jail. I'm sure he could connect the dots there. So the same goes here. I don't have any reason to harm myself. So if anything happens, it's not for me. Hashtag panic stake.
Yeah, you know, there's a few different stories like that, I feel, sometimes, Bob, that reach from time to time.
We just talked about it on our veterans episode a couple weeks ago with the concept of the Men in Black.
Yeah, where it's kind of like an eerie thing in the whole concept. I believe it, Bob. I think this is a little more believable than, the last story. But, you know, I don't see this being anything too far-fetched, actually, I'll be honest.
The UFO or the concept that he's being stalked?
Both.
Yeah. I'm not, you guys know me. I'm not a conspiracy theory podcast. I'm not that type of content creator. I'm going with probable. That's all I got to say on the matter.
Probable.
Yeah. I think it's a probable thing to happen.
Probably.
All right, Count Panic.
Yeah.
Ready to take a quick break?
Sure, why not?
All right, let's take a quick break for our podcast fans. Stick around. You're about to be hearing words from a podcast that you should be listening to. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Ghostly.
Pat, what are you doing?
What? I want people to know that we're a podcast that takes a deep dive into some of the scariest ghost stories.
But we don't do the creepy voices or weird sound effects. We debate the ghost stories. And aren't you supposed to be the skeptic?
I am, but they'll find that out once they listen.
Look, all you have to do is tell them to listen to Ghostly, and that our listeners get to decide which stories are real.
And which stories are just old folklore.
Exactly.
Download Ghostly wherever you find great podcasts.
Oh, jeez. Oh.
And we're back. Oh, hey there, Count.
Oh, hey there, Bob.
What did you do during break?
Bob, during the break, you wouldn't believe it. You wouldn't believe it. I just ordered and I took out about 1,000 blood pierogi.
Blood pierogi?
Yeah.
Huh.
What'd you do?
You know, I was attempting to glitch out of the Matrix. I want to go home.
Really?
Yep. I was running into the walls trying to see if I can clip out of reality, but then I ended up in the back rooms and I just hightailed it back here. This is home now.
Yeah. Yep. Well, you don't be stuck in there, Bob. We need you here.
All right. So, Count.
Yeah.
I have a very interesting one for you this week, given to me by the Queen of the Night.
Hit me with it.
I'm going to start this off with a quote from Pierre Burton, circa 1947. "The legend of the Headless Valley. It is one of those few pieces of bona fide folklore that we have in Canada. I think you will agree that it's a perfectly good legend, too, for it has something, almost everything in it." So this week on Bob After Dark, we are talking about the legend of the Nahanni Valley, or the Headless Valley, the Northern Canada's greatest mystery. I'm going to be reading an article straight from the Mysteries of Canada website, and this is a really good article, so I'm going to be reading it word for word. We'll talk a little bit about it, but you guys are in for a really cool experience. "Deep in the heart of the Canadian North, in the southernmost reaches of the Mackenzie Mountains, lies the valley of the South Nahanni River, a mysterious area shrouded in legend. Long before the first white explorers paddled their canoes into the country in search of fur, local Dene Indians gave place a wild birth. These natives believed that the valley was an evil area pervaded by bad medicine, a malevolent supernatural presence which hung over the place perpetually like its ever-present fog. Over the years, a number of native hunters, spurred by bravery, foolishness, or desperation, wandered in a valley in search of game. The few who have returned regaled their fellows with all manner of hair-raising tales. At night, while their compatriots crouched around the campfire, these survivors told of encounters with an evil spirit who haunted the valley, whose unearthly shrieks echoed throughout the canyons on windy nights. Others described a race of fearsome, hairy giants who dwelled in the caves carved from canyon walls. Led by a beautiful, pale-skinned chieftress, these primitive mountain men killed and ate anyone who trespassed on their territory. According to Dene tradition," and this is D-E-N-E, "tradition in ancient times, Nahanni Valley was inhabited by a nomadic, warlike tribe known as the Naha. The Naha were ferocious warriors who frequently descended from their mountain home to raid Dene settlements in the lowlands surrounding the Liard and Mackenzie Rivers. After suffering a number of devastating incursions, a party of Dene braves took to the warpath, traveling into the Nahanni country with intention of pillaging a Naha camp. In time, the warriors came upon a scattering of teepees and prepared to attack. Upon rushing into the camp with their weapons at hand, however, the Dene discovered that their enemies were nowhere to be found. It was as if they vanished into thin air. With all the campfire tales of evil spirits and giant cannibals swiftly recalled to the mind, the Dene warriors fled the country, beating a fearful retreat back to the lowlands, and they never saw the Naha again. In the early 1800s, fur traders of the Northwest Company established Fort Layard and the Fort of the Forks, the later renamed Fort Simpson, two trading posts situated on the Liard River, upriver, and the downriver of the Mountain of the South Nahanni, respectively. In the trading room on the trail, these, though frontiersmen, learned of the horrors of the Nahanni from the native clients. In 1823, 2 years after the Northwest Company made their way into the Hudson Bay Company, a valiant voyager named John McLeod attempted to explore a remote valley, but did not make it far upriver on the account of the rapids. He embarked upon a similar expedition the following year and was met with similar results. In the summer of 1897, word spread of a fabulous gold strike in the Klondike. In no time, men and women from all over the world were on their way to the northern diggings. These are so-called stampeders approached the Yukon by the number of different trails. One of them was a grueling all-Canadian overland route which began in Edmonton, Alberta. Of the 766 stampeders who attempted this treacherous trail, a handful opted to take an even more hazardous shortcut by the way of the South Nahanni River. Big mistake. Although at least two of these men successfully reached their destination, many more disappeared in the misty valley long shunned by the natives. In the aftermath of the Klondike Gold Rush, sourdoughs, as veterans of the Northland sometimes referred to, who failed to strike and rich in the Yukon, began to look elsewhere for gold. Hmm. A number of these restless prospectors wandered into the Nahanni country and began to pan the Mayed Creeks, which fled the South Nahanni and the Flat Rivers. Some who returned from the diggings filled northern trading posts and saloons with strange tales of a paradisical valley hidden away somewhere in the mountains of the Mackenzie. This valley, they maintained, was snow-free all year round, which is completely bonkers, and its tropical climate attributed to the hundreds of bubbling hot springs which ran through it. Cloaked by heavy fog, the valley soil was black and fertile, supporting a spectacular variety of lush exotic greenery. The subarctic Eden was permanently a hunter's paradise due to the excellent grazing conditions it teemed with wild game. One prospector said a moose, a caribou, and a mountain sheep that lived in this lost world were so well fed that it was almost square from fat. Hand in hand with the tales of the tropical valley were stories of mammoths, mastodons, and other prehistoric monsters said to still roam the desolate recesses of the Nahanni. Indian trappers and white prospectors alike claim that they have observed fresh tracks from, these prehistoric monster relics in the snow or the soft clay creek beds. And many frontiersmen return from the wilderness bearing priceless ivory tusks with hair and flesh still adorned to the hole, or to the bone. Rumor had it that some of the hunters had encountered, some of these crazy beasts deep within the Mackenzie country and lived to tell the tale. Wild stuff so far, huh? So we have this area up in Canada that is said to, you go there, this entire tribe of people just went missing. Mm-hmm. Some are saying they're being eaten by this white creature. There's giants roaming around the mountains just eating people. And a magic-like tropical oasis in the middle of these mountain-like ranges and stuff where woolly mammoths, saber-toothed tigers, and other prehistoric-like monsters are still, roaming around. So this place just has everything going on.
It's terrifying, it sounds like.
Now, by the way, this is a real place in Canada. It is extremely remote. It is not easy to get there, even in, 2023. Some people, explorers and, survivor people, weekend warriors, whatever you want to call them, say this is some of the most undiscovered and uncharted areas, topside the world.
You don't find yourself here often.
No, not much. And the people that do claim that they're being attacked by woolly mammoths and, giants.
Yeah. It's not someone you want to stay and visit, I don't think.
In spite of all the dreadful stories of bad medicine, evil spirits, hairy giants, and prehistoric monsters, a handful of entrepreneuring prospectors continue to try their luck in the Nahanni Valley in hopes of discovering gold. Two such men were Willie and Frank McLeod, Metis brothers who Father Murdoch once served as chief factor at Fort Liard. Sometime in between 1904 or 1905, the brothers equipped with mining gear disappeared up the South Nahanni and, according to some, further up the Flat River. And guess what?
What?
They were never seen again.
Well, that happens.
That happens. 3 years after the brothers' departure, Willie and Frank's younger brother, Charlie, fearing the worst, mounted a search party. The ragtag band of trappers and ex-mounties he recruited headed up the South Nahanni, warily scanning the wooded shore for anything out of the ordinary. After several days of tracking, paddling, and poling the canoes upriver, Charlie and his crew made a grisly discovery. On a stretch of the riverbank, known therefore as Dead Man Valley, sprawled the remains of Willie and Frank. Guess what was missing?
I could only imagine.
What their was heads. Their,
oh, my gosh.
And guess what was never to be found?
What was
their heads.
Oh, man.
Word of the macabre finds spread like wildfire throughout the Canadian North. Over steaming mugs of sweetened tea, a staple of the northern frontier, trappers and traders speculated as to the nature of the brothers' gruesome fate. Had they been killed by one of the hairy cave-dwelling giants of native lore? Had they been murdered by the Nahanni Indians, an elusive, mysterious tribe said to fiercely be protective of their hunting grounds? Or perhaps they've been beheaded by a rival prospector or trapper gone mad, his mind shattered years by an isolation in the bush. Growing in conjunction with these stories were rumors that the Nahanni country was rich in gold, and that the brothers had a massive strike on one of the creeks sometime prior until their ultimately demise. In no time, the whispers of the lost mine, a subarctic El Dorado, where gold nuggets the size of goose eggs littered the creek beds, rippled up and down the Mackenzie. One by one, veterans of 40 Mile, Klondike, Nome, and Fairbanks goldfields trickled into the Nahanni Valley, pans, picks, and the whipsaws strapped to their dog sleds and canoes. One of these prospectors lured by the tales of gold was Martin Johergensen, a Norwegian woodsman who entered the Nahanni country in 1910. 5 years later, guess what?
What?
His headless corpse was discovered about a mile above the Flat River. Nearby stood the charred remains of his log cabin, which had mysteriously burned to the ground. Like the brothers, guess what?
What?
His head was never found.
Seems to be a common theme here.
In the wake of Johergensen's death, dozens of prospectors similarly met with bizarre ends in various reaches of the Nahanni Valley. In the winter of 1922, for example, the body of a World War I veteran named John O'Brien was discovered on the mountainside not far from Dead Man Valley, hunched over a pile of tinder with his matchbook in his hand, as if he was frozen to death while trying to light a fire. Legend has it that another man, an Ontario prospector named Ernest Savard, was found dead in his sleeping bag in 1945. Guess what? Head's missing!
Yeah.
Other men who have entered the country, like trappers Bill Epler and Joe Mulholland, simply vanished without a trace. Some sourdoughs saw these bizarre deaths and disappearances as affirmations of what they have long believed, that the valley is cursed, and that those who dare search for its gold, or come close to finding it, invariably suffer some sort of ghastly fate. As the years drew on, the remote wilds of the Nahanni began to appeal to geologists, naturalists, and other representatives of the scientific community. Of course it would. It's uncharted territory. Who doesn't want to go there and check this place
out, right? Yeah.
With the northern frontier ever shrieking under an onslaught of an industrial exploration, these academics jumped at the opportunity to study the vast tract of virgin wilderness, virtually unspoiled by man. Throughout the 1960s, some of the scholarly professionals who entered the Nahanni returned from their expeditions with experiences they could not explain. The accounts of these academics, coupled with local anecdotes, gave rise to the Nahanni legend once again. According to these witnesses, the Nahanni Valley is home to an enormous, solidarily wolf-like creature eerily reminiscent of the monster of Inuit myth, dubbed the Walahela.
Walahela.
W-A-H-E-E-L-A.
Okay.
The mysterious creature is believed to be some sort of relic, an ancient carnivorous bone-crushing mammal referred to as a bear dog, supposed to have gone extinct 8 million years ago. Others maintain that the physical description corresponds more closely of the dire wolf, a prehistoric relative of modern-day timber wolf. Whatever the case, some consider this wolf creature to likely be a suspect in the Nahanni's mysterious deaths and disappearances. Around the same time as the Walahela encounters, various sightings of a short, hairy, half-naked subhuman were reported in the vicinities of Fort Layard, Nahanni Butte, and Fort Simpson, respectively. Clad in moose-skin loincloth, carrying a stone club, and sporting a long, dark beard, this creature was given the name Nukluk by the local Dene. Its stature is insanely different. The creature sharply evoked the old tales of hairy cave-dwelling cannibals first told around campfires decades ago. Not to mention, there is a story of a woman who has been spotted walking around naked, just going up into the mountain and disappearing, and then coming back. So there's a naked woman running around. There's, you know, prehistoric people running around, prehistoric monsters and curses. You know, werewolves are running around up there. So this place is legitimately terrifying. What's your take so far?
Yeah, I mean, Bob, it seems like people head up there and nothing good happens. So I'm of the mindset of just, you know, leaving it be. I mean, what's the point at this point? I mean, if you know something bad's going to happen, you might walk off without your head. Why even make the trip?
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
What else do you think's going on up there? Do you think anything up there is, you know, true based on what I'm telling you?
I mean, from what you're telling me here, I mean, it seems like it's a string of bad luck for all these folks.
You know, it's interesting because it's so undiscovered, and even academics are there talking about this thing because it's like uncharted territory, and because it's really untouched by, you know, modernization. I think it's possible things might still be alive up there that we thought might have gone extinct, just because, you know, most of the world's been explored and things have been haunted to death. Things are, you know, proven to be dead. Doesn't mean there's not places that still exist where something like this might be a thing on the planet.
Yeah.
You know, you look at the stories of Nessie being alive in Loch Ness, right? And we're wondering, is that might be, you know, some sort of derivative from this dinosaur once upon a time ago that's still living in caverns. Same concept, but such a remote part of the area that's just uncharted. I'm buying into it. I think there's definitely something going
there's
on.
There's something
up
going
there.
On here for sure.
What's the scariest part of the place, you think, in your opinion?
I think we're going to lose their heads, Bob. what gestation was that?
What's that?
Where was the losing of the heads?
The Dead Man's Valley.
Yeah, I think that might be the whole horrible one. Definitely don't want to go out that way.
You want to keep your head intact.
You want to keep your head intact if something's going to happen. Yes, don't lose your head is what they say.
You know, I'm just it's an interesting thing.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Would you go? Would you take a trip?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, there. Hey, let's book a flight.
You want to go?
No. How about you go first and you come back and let me know how it is?
Okay.
All right.
You don't want to come with me?
Bob, I'm going to take a pass on this one, I think. I think I'm going to keep my head on me. I need my head. Vampires need their heads.
Not to mention, man, you know, there's also the Garden of Eden up there, too.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's something to consider, too, as well. I mean, that's a historic sacred ground, as we know. Of course, yeah.
So I'm going. In fact, I think I heard of a possible gold rush going on again.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, you think you got it in you to do some prospecting?
Wouldn't be the first time.
Have you prospected before?
Centuries ago, Bob. Centuries ago.
Sounds good. Do you have any closing words for our audience this evening, Count?
Bob, be careful out there. And again, if you're going to book a trip for yourself, may I suggest maybe a Disney World or something like that, you know? Wisconsin Dells or something.
I'm going up there.
Okay. I'll hold you to it.
Folks, thank you so much for watching and listening to another episode of Bob After Dark. I just want to wish you guys all sweet dreams. To my mom, I just want to wish you good night as well. And Dad, wherever you are in the universe, I hope you're happy and comfortable. And Tiff, no matter where you are on this planet, I hope you're happy and comfortable and have the sweetest dreams of them all. Good night, everybody. And remember, the two most important rules of Bob After Dark are not all who wander are lost, and as above, so below. Until next time.
Memoriam Development.